worst thing there'll be is like 2005 threadworm medication for the kids. That'll be the worst thing that's on there. Oh, I need a laugh, there's a helping people. Don't pass talking to these funny people. He's asking what they find in the town stories. Can somebody yell out the name of the show, please? It's my mate, Water Toaster. Oh, it's my mate, Water Toaster. Yeah, yeah, it's my mate, Water Toaster. Oh, toaster.
Hello, welcome along. It's another episode of My Mate Bought a Toaster. Tom Price here with you, as ever. And I'm sitting with the Reverend Kate Botley's laptop on my lap, which means that, because I'm not a thief, Kate's also in the room with me, and she is my guest today. Hello.
Hello. It feels a bit confessional.
It already does, doesn't it? We're in a dark room in the basement here at Gramercy Park Studios in central London, and we are about... We're about to get some truth.
Bless me, Father, for I've sinned.
Excellent start. That's the sort of religious caveat, isn't it? Once you've done the caveat, you can say anything. So here's what we're going to do, Kate. I've got your laptop. I've got your Amazon account.
And
so I'm going to go to the first thing you ever bought. All right. So this is in 2000. Okay. This is in the year 2000. This is 22 years ago. Almost to the day. No, it's almost to the day. In November 2000.
I'm utterly terrified about what you're about to say.
It's fine.
Is it okay?
Yeah. I mean, it's classic Amazon territory, early doors. This is the sort of thing people are always buying. It's A History of Britain by Simon Sharma.
Oh, I obviously bought that as a present for someone, I think that was a Christmas present. I think that was Graham's mum had said, I really like that series. I think the series was on at the time.
And he was huge back then, Simon Sharma.
Yeah, I mean, has he been cancelled yet?
I don't know.
Probably has, hasn't he?
Oh, he might have said something at the moment.
Said something.
This is increasingly becoming a theme on the show.
Said.
This is so weird because a couple of weeks ago, someone started with, Lou Conran started with Woody Allen and J.K. Rowling.
I've got some J.K. Rowling in there as well.
Oh, well, I know. We'll just absolutely swerve all contention on this podcast, guys. This is a contention-free zone. But interesting that, you know, that was a huge... book. It's one of those books, and I don't know if this happens in the same way anymore, that you just saw everywhere. Everyone. I see the image. It's three big stones coming out of the beach. Someone listening will be like, yeah, you should know what that is. It's on some famous beach somewhere. But it feels like one of those sort of, I don't know, in Britain, we're obsessed with our history.
Because the moment you said it, I visualised that front cover really clearly.
Yeah.
So even if I did buy it for someone else, I'm sure I've got a copy of it on my shelf as well.
Yeah.
And it's that... You know, someone who is sort of grounded and rooted in religion, history goes absolutely through all that, you know, and the story of our islands and the story of how faith came here and all those kind of like the evolution of faith. And I always think that the faith of Britain is a bit like our housing. Mm-hmm. You know, that we have these kind of old houses, but then someone puts a conservatory on it, and then someone puts a kitchen extension on it, and then someone puts a new roof on it. And that's what religion's like in this country.
Yes.
Is that when, you know, people go, oh, well, I prefer the old religions of paganism. And someone said to me recently, you know, so much of Christianity is pagan, don't you? And I said, darling, if we got rid of all the paganism and Christianity, there would be very little left.
It's often used as a sort of atheist's trump card. I think, to be honest, I've probably used it myself. I'm going, well, actually, Christmas and the idea of worshipping a child.
Saturnalia.
Yeah.
And you're like, yes, we know. This is not a surprise to us. Oh, the goddess Easter is where Easter comes from. You're like, yes, we know. It's like fools on social media that like to argue religion with it. I was reading one the other day that was arguing with the Pope about theology because they'd, you know, read the Bible once. And you kind of think, you know, if we stripped back all these, we sort of know that it's layer upon layer, right? We know that it is like an archaeological dig.
Yeah.
That when it comes to faith, there's just layer upon layer upon layer that keeps getting added. But there's something about humans that needs spirituality, that needs something bigger than themselves, you know?
Yes. But that's also, I would say, that ties into the history. If you wanted to look at it that way, obviously you can put a religious read on history and seeing our heritage.
Oh, absolutely.
But equally, what I find interesting about history is the comfort of it and the way that people sort of look back on it and go, I don't want to argue, I just want the facts. And I think that religion is in a place where people will go, yeah, I want to argue about that. And it's like, why can't we take a pause and just the history of religion is fascinating.
And absolutely fascinating. And that's what the Sharma book and the series was all about. So it explored things like sacred sites, you know, places of value in our nation. And, yeah, just the beautiful stories. And it made me want to go to those places, right?
Yeah.
Those kind of books just make you want to go, oh, I want to go and see that.
Yes.
I want to go and touch it and smell it and be there.
And do, what? Tell me what that feeling is like then. So you should go to a sacred site. Say for you, and I don't know where that might be in the UK, but somewhere, what is the feeling like? Because I often go to places like, oh gosh, went to Whitby Abbey in the summer, right? Absolutely incredible, right? And I'm looking at it, it's beautiful up on the cliff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's incredible. And I'm sort of, obviously I'm tuning into heavy goth sort of Dracula vibes.
Lovely.
Amazing. But also
smashing.
It's a spectacular building. And I used to have this, I grew up near Tintern Abbey, right? And yeah. I'd go there. And I'd always try and feel something and I could never feel anything.
No, and I think that manufacturing that sort of stuff, I mean, I'm most of the time I'm as spiritual as dishwater, to be honest with you. I sometimes, honestly, you do have to manufacture it yourself. If you think that every time a priest stands behind a communion table and does the magic hands over the bread and the wine, we feel incredibly spiritual. We don't. Mm. You know, sometimes you just have to pull it out of the bag. You're just thinking, actually, what am I doing for tea? Oh, you know, where have I parked the car? You know, we don't live, those of us who are religious don't live our lives, especially those of us professionally religious like I am,
yeah.
We don't live our lives on some sort of Zen plane where we sort of float along in a holy.
You're not
kind
a floater. I thought you were a floater, but I have always, it's the cassocks. I've always thought there is something otherworldly about people who have faith, and especially professionally who have faith. And I remember my brother's best friend at school was our local vicar.
Yeah, yeah.
James Coutts. What a guy. He was the most gorgeous, gorgeous man in the world. And I would go round to his house when I was a kid and I'd be like, is he praying? Is he just like, you know, you just assume, and you don't say that if someone works in IT, are they up in their room, you know, fixing the hard drive?
You're just having a little sleep on a train and people go, she's ever so holy, she prays all the time. but you're constantly brought back down to earth in my job. You know, yeah. I think people like to think we have this kind of spiritual aura around us, and that'd be very nice if I did, but you know, so for example, you're going to visit a home where someone's died and you go and see the family and, you know, they offer you the only seat that's there and it's the commode and you sit down and it sloshes as you sit down. And all of a sudden that spiritual aura that you kind of try and pretend that you've got, you really haven't, and it doesn't work like that. It's very practical most of the time. True story.
What an image. What an image. I think that's Kate's way of saying she doesn't want to sit on the commode in the studio. Fine. You can sit on the sofa instead. Fine. But I will need the commode halfway through.
My matey bought a toaster.
December 2000, this tells me a lot about you. Unless it's a present again, 100 classic cocktails. Drink recipes for all occasions. Yes.
No, that was for me. And was it December?
Yeah.
Well, you know what I was doing there, right?
Yeah.
I was getting ready for Christmas. I was like, right, okay, how am I going to get through 17 million carol services? How am I going to sing Away in a Manger again with integrity? Even though it's Victorian nonsense.
So, but hang on, if it's 2000, what stage were you at as a vicar in 2000?
Oh, I wasn't ordained.
So
I wasn't ordained, was I? Because I got ordained in 2008, 2009. So this is 8 years prior. We didn't even have kids then.
Right.
Oh my goodness, this is so weird.
Right, so come on, let's Simon Sharma this. What are we looking at here? What sacred spot for Kate Botley are we looking at here?
2000, I bought a book of cocktail recipes.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it was just Christmas.
But what were you doing in your life? Where were you? When did you get the calling? Were you just working in an office?
Do you know what the thing is as well there is I would have been 6 weeks pregnant there. Right. So why am I buying cocktail recipes when I can't drink them? Obviously wishful thinking. It's obviously like, because Ruby was born in August 2001.
Named after a cocktail, presumably.
Presumably.
She was either that or Manhattan.
Maraschino cherries. So, yeah, I was 6 weeks pregnant, six, 8 weeks pregnant there. So we were just about to announce it to family and stuff that Christmas that I was expecting a baby.
I love it. Well, but of course you can still, I mean, let's assume you were, you know, she's now 21, 22,
21.
Right?
That's mad, right?
Oh my goodness.
So this Amazon history thing predates kids for me. That's so weird.
I know. We're going into the dark ages, lit by the light, not of God, but of cocktails.
My goodness.
That's what we've got. But I'm familiar with the cocktails thing. My wife's a big cocktail drinker because it's quite a neat hit of alcohol and then you can chill. Rather than having wine over the whole evening, she will often hit a cocktail first up.
I love a cocktail.
And then she won't drink so much for the rest of the night.
I have very little self-control when it tastes like Vimto. You know, because it's that thing, isn't it? If cocktails is like, you can kid yourself that it's just fizzy pop. and then you try and stand up and your legs don't work.
Yeah.
I just love it. And I increasingly, like, I think the older I get, you know, they talk about refined taste as you get older, and I'm 47 now, and I sort of get to the point where you didn't gasp hard enough there. Can we do that again?
Sorry.
Try again?
Yeah, I'm really
47,
sorry.
I've got a 21-year-old. I know, right? It's unbelievable. Whoa. It's the Holy Spirit. Holy Spirit and oil of Yule, that's what does it.
She's preserved, she's pickled in her own cocktails. That's
in my own juice. In my own mini gherkin juice.
Yes.
Yeah, so I get more refined taste as I get older. Mm. And I'm less willing to spend good money on bad things.
Yes. I mean, ain't that the truth? You start to really focus what you spend your money on as you get older. That is so true for yourself as well.
I'm like, no, I'm not drinking that. I'm drinking the good stuff. I'm having it. I'm having the good stuff.
You've got a kid who's, you know, 20 plus years old. You've spent 2 decades of having to be selfless. So now is your time.
You can see why all the kind of like revolutionary movements were started by perimenopausal and menopausal women, right? Like Greenham Common, Votes for Women, all that sort of stuff. Because they're like that, right? I've looked after people now for a long time. I'm looking after myself and others. You know, I'm causing revolution. This is what I'm doing.
There's an argument that, and I would never reveal what's going on in my personal life or indeed the personal life of anyone in my house, but certainly I'm familiar with the perimenopausal
with the depleting
process.
Estrogen.
Yeah. And
also my drag name.
She's great. Vauxhall Tavern this Friday. There is an argument that the perimenopausal thing when women go, yeah, okay, right. Do you mind if I have
now?
I think that serves a purpose because a lot of people say there's this sort of suggestion that, well, actually, that's just women, you know, once they are, biologically speaking, you finish your breeding.
Yeah, yeah.
And biology now goes, don't need you anymore, women, because you've made more kids, right? There's an argument that actually perimenopausal women who do all the things and have the time and the anger, that serves a very important
And we're not
purpose.
Drunk anymore on estrogen, right? So we don't care. We're not trying to get people to breed with us. We haven't got anyone to impress.
Yes, it's like men. I would love to be uncoupled from my testicles in my mid-40s. Just put those away. And
sure, that can be arranged.
Just okay. We'll do a Kickstarter.
Well, how did we get onto that?
I don't know, Kate. This is going to be the story of the whole podcast.
Go on.
From cocktails to Tom's bollocks.
So, yes, this is pre-ordination. You were asking about where I was
in
my story.
That's what it was. Thank you.
So, at this stage, what was I doing? I was teaching. I was a secondary school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I was teaching in a really rough comp. That's probably why I was ordering cocktail books.
Yeah.
A really rough comp that, I mean, I absolutely loved it. Naughty Boys were my absolute favourite. I used to teach a lot. You never forget their names. I used to teach a lot called Ben Grocock.
Oh.
I wonder where he is now. And Ben Grocock's dad was kind of the local drug dealer on the estate. And I remember one lesson I was teaching Ben and the lads at the back went, Ben, your dad's on roof. And we looked out my classroom window and his dad had been raided by the coppers and he climbed out the bathroom roof and sat on the roof of the house for the rest of the school day while policemen just stood underneath and went, are you coming down or what? Are you coming down or what? Are you coming down or what? And eventually he did come down and he ended up having to do community service as the crossing patrol, which was great fun. And he assaulted someone with the lollipop, I remember, in the end.
What, when he was doing community service?
Yeah, yeah. That was Ben Grocock's dad. Robbie Bean once threw a chair at me. That was fun.
Amazing.
I mean, the thing about being the RE, I was an RE teacher.
Yeah.
And the thing about being the RE teacher is people's expectations were so low of how good a lesson it was going to be.
They would just go in. But then I had two RE teachers as a kid. I had the one who was like, right, we're going to read out bits of the Bible. But then I had the other, Reverend Hensher, sadly passed away. What a guy, who would literally sit down and go, what's the biggest crime a person can commit? And we're all
oh, come on.
12 years old going, I don't know, sir. Being in the same room as a woman? Like, blowing our minds. And so would you take the low expectations?
I would do things like, if we were doing baptism, I would bring a real baby in and christen the baby. Spend the whole day christening this baby.
That's amazing. What an image. There's you with a real baby in the classroom. One of their dads is on the roof. He's watching.
Mad.
You see what she's doing in there?
Being a teacher was absolutely mad. And it was in the days where RE was pre-Ofsted. So we got away with all sorts of things that we would never get away with now.
What like?
Like I hid in a cardboard box for a whole lesson once and taught from inside a cardboard box. I don't know what the point was. It will have had a point, but I just thought that's what. And then we used to do the thing where, you know, like they do in factories where they send you for a long stand and stripy paint and stuff.
Yes.
We used to do that, but with notes. So we'd give Robbie Bean or Ben Grocock a note that said, please keep this child busy.
Yes.
And you'd just send them to the next classroom. And then they'd take it out and look at it and go, yes, yes, please take this to Mr. Jones in whatever classroom. And you just get the kid out of the room so you could teach the rest of the class.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
We used to stuff like that all the time.
That is amazing.
And of course, I was pregnant as well at this point, so I was obsessed by birth.
Yeah.
So I remember showing the kids lots of birth videos.
Oh my word.
Which I think probably traumatised them. But, I was talking about, like, life beginning and, yeah. You know, how do we mark those big moments in our lives and
Here's
stuff.
Someone crowning.
Here's a baby. This is what I'm about to go through.
But I remember it very clearly when I first watched that video as a kid, and it is defining and makes you go, well, I'm never having kids. This is terrifying. Even as a boy, I was like, oh, my God.
And I used to teach sex education as well, because the RE teacher, like, sort of picks up all sorts of various bits of jobs.
Yeah.
So I taught sex education for a little while as well, and that was a lot of fun. We used to have a box at the front of the classroom where the kids could put notes in and ask any questions that they wanted to if they were too embarrassed to ask them.
Yeah.
And we just used to take them to the staff room and laugh.
Outrageous.
We just go, hey, look at this one. Who do you think wrote that?
The confidence.
Who do you think wrote that?
That is fantastic. That is the best possible thing to do on your lunch break. That's like the weirdest game of charades ever. Filthy charades. Can you eat a condom?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Who's that? Oh, it's got to be Grocock. It's classic Grocock.
Yeah.
Is
it burning or is it itching? What does it mean if it's burning?
It's amazing how innocently they ask the questions. My son's 10 and he's doing RE at the moment. Not RE. What's it called? Sex education now?
PHSE.
There you go. That'll do. And he said to me the other day, as we were walking home, Daddy, can you eat your own semen?
I mean, we're not kink shaming anyone.
Right. So you have to, but this is the thing. So we're trying to be as absolutely straight down the line as possible.
Yes, of course.
You can, darling. What are you going to have for tea? You just crack on, you know?
Yeah. Because we're right on parents. We can have these kind of conversations with our kids, but part of you is still giggling. Part of you stood in a corner going,
because inside we're all 10 years old.
And then I'm presuming you phone your partner, you phone your wife and go, you'll never guess what he said. Or like, you know.
This is the thing, right? Kids, if you're listening to this podcast, and you shouldn't be, any kids listening to this is not for kids, but they need to tune into the fact that if they say something and I instantly pull my phone out as soon as they say it.
You're definitely texting the other half.
That is the sign. Let's skip on ahead. 2002 now, 7th of January, the only time you use Amazon in the whole year.
No.
7th of January, that's it.
See, that's what I'm aiming for now.
And we all are on that journey, I think.
We're all on that journey, right?
You bought Greatest Hits Volume 2 of Madonna.
Did I?
Yeah. And you bought Swing When You're Winning.
Oh, no.
Robbie Williams. When Robbie Williams decided he was in the Rat Pack, Robbie went twat pack. And you know what?
I could tell you the story of that.
Yes.
I could tell you the story of Robbie Williams and that. And it's not great. So Graham plays the violin. My husband plays the violin.
Yeah.
And that particular night, so I've got a one-year-old by this time. Mm-hmm. We're starting to think about maybe having more children. But basically, I'm at home with the one-year-old. Mm-hmm. You know, with sick down your jumper and feeling very unglamorous. The stretch marks in places they were never used to be. Mm. Things have changed, all that. I'm feeling the least sexy in my life. Mm. Graham plays the violin. He goes out to play in a concert that night in his tuxedo, right?
And is that a thing? Is that,
he's got his tuxedo and he leaves the house. I'll be back later, darling. I'm playing in a concert. I'll be back late. So I put the baby to bed. I sit down and I watch Robbie Williams Swinging While You're Winning, the concert that he did on telly.
Yes.
In his tux, with the whole band in their tux, with the whole sultry, sultry, sultry.
I've just had a glimpse of where this might be going.
So Graham comes in from the night out with his violin, with his bow tie just loose around his neck.
like they do. That's the thing they do. That means open for business.
And I'm sat there in my, you know, elasticated waist pyjamas, you know, with, I think I was probably still breastfeeding at this point, just feeling wretched. And Graham walks in with his tux on. I've been watching Robbie Williams singing with his tux on. I'm a little bit, I'll be honest, Robbie Williams isn't my bag these days, mm-hmm. but obviously he was that night. And I just went, Graham went, hi, I'm home. I went, don't talk, you'll spoil it. Don't say anything. You'll spoil it. Just go upstairs. I'll be there in 2 minutes. And he went, okay. I'm grabbing back my femininity and my eroticism as a woman.
I'm using Robbie Williams. He is going to be the walking stick I use to get back to normal. Wow.
I just remember him walking through the door and be going, don't say anything. You'll spoil it.
One day, Graham's going to meet Robbie Williams and just say, thank you, mate.
Thanks, mate. Thanks, great
thanks a lot. I think a lot of blokes want to say that to James Blunt. Thanks, dude. Great album. Sometimes you gotta spice up your life in the bedroom. How about you go online and buy a sexy costume? Love it at this age doesn't have to be doom and gloom. Oh, it's time you felt so fine, you buy a sexy costume. I love this, by the way. In January 2003 and in July 2003, right? So stay with me for this. Stephen Botley has got From You, Come Away With Me by Norah Jones and nice. A Rush of Blood to the Head by Copland. Two lovely albums. And then maybe this is Stephen's birthday or something. I don't know. July 2003, Hannah Gregory, she gets Come Away With Me by Norah Jones and A Rush of Blood to the Head. Exactly.
She gets exactly the same. Oh, I'm sad. This tells you everything you need to know about a new mum.
Yeah.
I'm lacking imagination.
Yeah. Yeah, just have that.
They liked it. Graham's brother liked the album. My cousin will like the album. That's mm-hmm. what's happened there.
And then some dick invented Spotify and we can't buy CDs anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
That's all I had. Just going, here's a CD, here's an album.
I have no... This shows you what stage I was at because I would never do that now by double up presents for people.
No.
Lack the imagination.
Yeah.
I would try and tailor the present to the person, but obviously I got a lot on there.
And how was your spiritual life at this point when you've got the young kids and you are...
I said, oh, God and Jesus Christ a lot. Okay. Let's put it that way.
And he heard you. They heard
she
you.
She did, yes.
She did. They did. All of them. And but did you have an epiphany? Was there a moment?
What, in terms of vocation?
Yeah. And was it... Because no. I would say in the middle of the night when I've not slept for hours, I'm very open for religious answers.
So I gave up full-time work to have the kids was what happened. And I just had that thing of when you've got two little kids. They were both, you know, one was four, one was two.
Yeah.
And you start going, okay, what's my point then? What is it for me? What's in it for me?
Mm-hmm.
And I just had this kind of feeling that I should be doing something. Mm. Now, the interesting thing about vocation and being called to priesthood is it's a bit like being a prime minister. If anybody ever says they want to do it, they probably shouldn't. And so you don't go, I want to be a vicar. That's not what happens. Okay. What happens is your community that you are in, so the church we were going to, start going, oh, could you go up the front and do the notices? Or could you go up the front and do the Bible reading? Or could you go up the front and do this, and this?
I see.
And then all of a sudden what happens is before you realise it, you kind of like, then people start sidling up to you and going, have you thought about ordination? Because you'd be really good at that.
Okay.
And enough people say it to you, or this is what happened for me, enough people said it to me that I thought, I better take that seriously.
Mm.
You'd be really good at that,
right.
You know. And I started doing things like, you know, at family weddings, I would do the prayers or I would help organise a service.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it started to be that it kind of just evolved and grew. And I did that thing where I just thought, I'll go and see how far this gets.
Yeah. Peer pressure. Prayer pressure.
Someone write that down. That was good.
Have it, free of charge.
Have it. Thanks, Pebs. So I just went to, I mean, and the process is arduous. So you go away and you see what's called vocations advisors. They interview you.
And so hang on, vocations advisors, they're from the church?
From the diocese, yeah, from
so
your
I'm imagining
area.
Men in black at this
from
point.
Your patch.
They turn up.
Mine was a woman and she was, and she just sits you down and goes, so what makes you think you can be a vicar then?
Is there a wrong answer at this stage?
Well, that's it, you see. You don't know because you don't really know what they're asking for.
Yeah.
And so I just talked about how, you know, I wanted to serve and how I loved people and I was passionate about my faith and all that kind of stuff. And then so they talk to you for a bit and then they pass you on to the next little group of people and then they talk to you for a bit. And then this goes on. This can go on for years where they just pass you around people to talk, clever people, wise people,
yes.
learned people mm-hmm. who are discerned. It's called the discernment process.
Wow.
And they discern whether you've got this vocation.
Okay.
And I remember...
At this stage, do you know people who are in this
process?
Oh,
yeah. And people drop off.
And people drop out.
People are in it for 10 years. I was in it for about a year.
Right.
And eventually they send you away. So people start writing reports on you and filling in forms about you.
Mm.
And eventually the bishop will go, right, you've been through this enough. Let's send you to the national kind of level.
Finals.
It's like X Factor judges' houses. I kid you not. They send you to a country house in the middle of nowhere. This like church-owned country house. And with other potential vicar wannabes.
Oh my days. This is a format.
It's incredible, right?
Why isn't this a format?
Why is this not a reality TV show? Then what they do is you have to do like a presentation. You have to write a pastoral letter. You have to be interviewed by loads of different people. They watch you have your breakfast. They watch you the whole time to see how you interact with people.
I see. Okay. Okay.
They do psychosomatic testing on you to make sure you're not going to climb to the top of the church tower this one day with a shotgun.
This doesn't sound...
I said, and also with you, cha-chung. You know, all that kind of stuff.
It's fine, you can do community service if that happens. This is all, I mean, not at all sounding like a cult. Not at all terrifying. I mean,
it is
one of those... Is the process still like this? Yeah, this sounds arcane.
And at no point is there a guarantee that you're going to be ordained. Yeah. Then they send you to theological college for 2 years. That's what happened for me. Things do change. You know, some people do non-residential now. Mm. So until the bishop puts their hand on your head at the service, they could say no at any point.
Wow.
So we moved, lock, stock, we moved two kids. Graham gave up his job. We moved to theological college in Nottingham, miles away from home.
Right.
I studied. And all through this process, there's a chance it might not come to anything.
So the pressure on you must have been immense.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And still is, you know, still is the kind
it's
of...
It's going okay.
It's going on. It's doing all right, I think.
Yeah. It's a work in progress.
I think I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing is when I did get ordained, you know, and people said, oh, what do you think your ministry is going to like? What do you think I'm going to end up doing? Mm. I want job in vicar, you know, job in weddings, Christmas, funerals, Sunday services, visiting old people.
Journey woman vicar. Just get me out of there.
Just job in vicar. And then it took an unexpected path. But when people said, oh, you know, when you first ordained, did you ever expect yourself to be doing Radio 2 and telly and all that? No, I didn't. But I didn't think it would be straightforward either.
Mm.
You know, yes. I expected there'd be a twist. Not like when you're watching a movie and you think there's a twist coming in. I expected there'd be a twist.
Yeah. Have you had that all your life? This sense of this is going to be fun. Something weird's going to happen. Things pop up.
Well, I've got terrible attention. I've got the attention span of a toddler. Mm. So I don't stay in things very long, you know. The longest I ever stayed in a job until I was ordained was 3 years.
Interesting.
So I move on quite quickly.
Yes.
And I just always wonder what's next. I'm always like, right, what's next? What's the next thing?
But that's why this is a great job, right? Because when you're with people, you know, especially the nature of what you do, people are rebooting constantly. The next person comes in.
And that's absolutely true. And, you know, doing the media stuff, because now I'm like a supply vicar these days. Is the best way to describe it. So I'm not paid by the church. I don't have a church of my own.
I see.
I cover for colleagues that are often ill.
Right.
I don't live in a vicarage. I'm like, yeah, I'm a supply. I'm voluntary. I'm like a special policeman, but a special vicar kind of thing.
Does like a signal go up in the sky?
A bat signal.
They need me.
Signal.
Yeah, the Botley signal's up. I've got to get to Liverpool by 9 a.m.
Quick. It's just in my patch. But certainly what happens is, you know, a funeral director will phone me and go, oh, so-and-so can't do this funeral. Can you cover for him? Yeah, of course I can. Mm. So I'll go and visit the family, who then proceed to spend the whole of the visit going, where do we know you from?
Oh yeah, amazing. Amazing. That is great.
Where do we know you from? And I don't always go, well, actually, I'm on the television.
So I
just don't say anything. And then you can suddenly see halfway through the creme service, they can like at the penny drop, they go, oh my goodness.
That's hilarious.
Can we have a selfie?
That's an awkward selfie. Exactly. Yeah. Do you want the corpse in the... No, thanks. No, we're all right for that.
It has... Really? You ask for selfies at funerals.
He loved you.
Shall we
that.
Finish this off first? Oh, shall we do this bit of the job?
Yeah.
And then I'll come to the wake for a cup of tea and we'll take one then.
Do all that then. Amazing. We're in 2005 now, by the way, on your Amazon purchase history.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're talking about.
That's what we're talking about. Yeah, there is a
threadworm medicine in there.
Not yet. We'll get to threadworm, but thanks for flagging that up for me. Best worship songs ever.
Oh, my goodness. That's so cringy.
Absolute. The best of God. And guess when you've bought it? What date do you think you've bought Reverend Kate Botley, the best worship songs ever?
Was it Christmas?
25th of December 2005.
On Christmas Day afternoon.
On Christmas Day. You thought, do you know what I'd like to buy? I'd like to buy the best worship.
Do you know what I'd like? On Jesus' birthday, a bit more religion.
And that's a bit like me getting into tennis when Wimbledon's on. Do you know what I mean?
It's very much like that.
Christmas is here. I love Christ. It really reminds me.
He's smashing, isn't he?
Let's buy
his best.
Best of.
That's really funny.
Volume 1, we're still waiting for volume 2, I guess. But then, you know, Christians, you're good at that. That's fine. Keep waiting. 5 times you've bought this
book. I haven't.
Yes, 5 times.
This is me trying to be more religious so that I can pass the tests.
So you're upping the religious ante.
I'm obviously having a bit of a spiritual kind of like, you know, get plugged in.
Yeah.
Get plugged into the Jesus thing.
Was the ordinance committee watching you while you were on Amazon? Were they doing a little My Mate Bought a Toaster back in the day? What's she doing?
Is she buying enough religious content?
I'm going to buy.
Look at me, I'm ever so holy.
I'm going to buy the best worship songs ever again. She's done very well. We've looked through her Amazon account. You got bangers. You got Take Us to the River. Lord, Let Your Glory Fall.
Oh, my goodness.
Beautiful saviour.
See, my daughter has these now on an ironic playlist in her Spotify account.
They're good tunes, man. And are your kids religious? Are you happy to talk about that?
I'm happy to talk about that. They've recently, very interestingly, both of them have experienced a bit of a revisit to their faith. So they're not, I was very happy clappy back then. I'm not so much now. I'm a bit more mellow these days.
Less religious than you used to be.
I'm not less religious. I'm just a little bit less blinkered, I would argue.
Interesting.
I'm less evangelical. I'm more inclusive now.
You see, I'm the same with my atheism. I was horribly atheist back in the day. Peak Dawkins. And now I'm so much more chilled about it.
So much more, you know, that back then I was still, I'm a new mum, trying to figure out who I am, trying to figure out identity, going through these massive stuff in my life. And the thing that a conservative, relatively conservative evangelical pathway gives you certainty. Gives you blacks and white, you know, it gives you in and out. It gives you a very straightforward view that is easy to digest.
Yes.
Whereas actually I'm much more nuanced in my spirituality these days. It's much more fluid. It's much more kind of, well, I don't know,
Yes.
So that's interesting, isn't it?
To keep probing at it and exploring it and digging it up, right? And going over it. Otherwise it just becomes set in stone.
You were asking about the kids.
Yeah.
And back then, you know, we were doing the whole, you know, we were taking them to kind of Christian holidays and camps and we were praying with them every night. And one of my biggest fears was that my kids would grow up and they wouldn't believe. I remember thinking, wouldn't that be terrible if you had kids that didn't believe? Now I'm much more relaxed about that. And actually what's happened is they've come back to their faith.
There you go.
Which is really interesting.
Yes.
So, for example, Ruby had a Tinder date the other day who told her that he hated organised religion. And she went, well, then I'm out.
That's
You've got to at least be sympathetic to it.
Yeah.
You can say I struggle with it or I find it difficult or that's really interesting, let's talk more about it. But the minute he went, I hate organised religion, she went, well, there's no future for us then.
I'd be out for so many reasons. I hate organised religion because it's not actually because of the sentiment, just because it's such a fatuous thing to say. Like, that's such a kind of first thought sitting around it.
No, I hate organised religion.
Yeah.
It's like, well, what do you mean
by
that? Do you mean that you hate people with power controlling people? Yes, of course, we all hate that.
Mm.
But let's unpick religion. Let's unpick food banks and, you know, and community care and visiting and hospitals and hospices and all those. Yeah. Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up, silly boy.
Tell you what, mate, lucky escape, because she would not have been a good mother-in-law.
But it's really interesting to me that they've both revisited their faith at 18 and 21.
That's
fascinating.
Great. It's like me with golf.
It's very much the same.
Very much pushed
and
on me
as a kid. And
also begins
with a G and an O.
yeah. And is the true purpose of life. And I really came back to it. It's the same sort of thing.
What's the budget history of this jokester? Stay tuned for my mate bought a toaster.
Let's skip on ahead. 2008. Bop It Extreme. 7th of November.
Come on.
I love Bop It. I love Bop It because it gets you in the moment. If you've never played Bop It, by the way, guys, it's the game where Bop It, squeeze it, twist it, and you
pull it.
Pull it, there you go. And you have to do it super quick.
Oh.
Yeah. Mine is the one we've got is one of the characters from Star Wars. Is it R2D2?
R2D2, we've got that one. He twists his head.
I can't do that.
And it's C3PO, is the voice on it.
Yes.
And it's R2D2.
Yes. That's it.
Oh, yeah, we've got that one as well.
Yeah, my, you are very tired.
And it's only a little bit. You can actually fit it in a bag if you need to take it somewhere with you.
But the kids played Bop It at a very young age. And it was one of the first things with the kids where I was like, actually, I do want to hang out with you and we'll just play Bop It together because it puts me in the moment, which I like.
I like the adrenaline as it gets faster and faster and faster.
Yes.
And I like giving it to my mum and dad who are a lot older and their reaction times are slower so I can beat them. Because it's not that I'm competitive. It's just that I'm a really bad loser. I just really like winning. Really like winning.
That's really interesting.
Really like winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's both a blessing and a curse.
I don't play games.
No.
I sound like a Gemma Collins there. I didn't think I'm here to play games.
I'll use that.
Didn't come here.
That'll be the clip at the beginning of the episode.
Play games. So we do play board, and you'll see on the Amazon history that we buy board games, but I don't play them.
You're
I'm a
not...
board flipper.
Wow. That is extraordinary. You'll just flip the whole thing
and
walk off.
Yeah, and I cheat. I would cheat. I would, if I can get, if you don't catch me cheating, that's on you.
So you should, so never leave the bank.
Never leave anything.
With your monopoly.
Never leave anything. I am that person that puts two cards down at Uno and puts one underneath the other so you can't see that I've put two cards down. I will cheat.
Did you have any siblings?
Yeah, older, 4 years older, yeah, brother.
That's the answer to that. Fine.
I have to win.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is. Sibling, why psychologists never go in that? Forget about, you know, fancying your mum and all that, Freud. Have you got any siblings? That explains everything.
4 years older, boy. I had to play rugby. I had to play cricket. I had to do, like, my brother was like, I haven't got a brother, right? You're going to learn how to bowl. You're going to learn how to bat. You're going to learn how to throw a rugby ball.
It's formative. It shapes you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
This is it. And then you hang out with his mates as well. So
I didn't know that I actually had any feeling in this arm from dead arm so much from being punched on that arm.
Oh my God. As you said dead arm.
Did your arm go dead?
No, pure muscle memory. I've done this with my fist. I've gone into my dead arm when you the middle knuckle just pokes out a little bit just to make that dead arm effective.
Yeah, yeah.
I gave my son his first dead arm the other day. Pride moment.
I like doing that one where you hold their hand and crunch their knuckles together. Do you ever do that one?
Save it for the parental discipline podcasts, Kate.
My dad used to do it when I was little. He used to hold my hand and then just like rub my knuckle. Ah, dad, ah, dad. And I still do that to the kids, hold their hands and rub their knuckles together.
That is just...
It's terrible.
So much fun. 21-year-old
we
still screaming at you.
Bop It.
I don't know how we've got from Bop It to that. All right, good. Let's move on now, Reverend Kate Botley. We've got the Vicar of Dibley, of course, which is where you got the idea to get into God.
Obviously.
You are Richard.
I mean, the
Curtis.
Comparison's very lazy, isn't it?
It really is. How often do you hear it?
So often. People stop me and they go, do you know who you remind me
very
of?
Good, very
and
good,
I go,
yes.
I don't know, Claudia Schiffer. You know, and they just think it's the first. And when they say, oh, that Vicar of Dimbleby, because they never quite get it right.
Vicar of Dimbleby.
They never quite Amazing. Get it right.
Oh,
like when they go, Googlebox, you used to be on Googlebox. Oh, for goodness sake. Vicar of Dimbleby. And I go, you know, that's the first time anyone's ever said that. And they go, really?
There's a lot of repetition in your life. There's a lot of repetition because you're talking about having to do your services with, you know, every time. Like it's the first time you're doing it. And also your interaction with people, not only have you got the sort of pressure, if you like, of being a celebrity, you know, that's some people love that. I think you love that. But also you've got the vicar thing where you've got to be fucking nice.
So sometimes with a dog collar on thing, you know, you'll be sat somewhere and you forget you've got it on. And sometimes I forget that I've got a face that people recognise as well.
Yeah.
And I forget my manners.
Your face is a dog collar, Kate.
A face and a dog collar.
Face like a dog collar.
And then, of course, what I end up doing is I end up saying something or behaving in a certain way and then go, oh, shit, I forgot.
Yes.
And then I have to like click back into vicar mode.
So do you have snappy moments with people?
Of course I do. I'm human.
Yeah, of course. But then do you have the fear of, because I always wonder about
all
this.
All the time.
If I got caught in a row, like Jamie Carragher, obviously what he did was horrific. Years ago, he spat on someone's car.
Yeah,
it was disgusting. But if I ever got caught in an incident like that, I am fundamentally not famous. But you do think, what if someone went Magic's Tom Price?
Oh, all the time. Right. And how much fun would it be to trip me up? You know, how I might have. It's the reason that I turned down I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Because you can only keep it up for about 12 hours before you actually then, you know, and it'd be no surprise to anybody who loves me that I have a short temper occasionally and that I swear like a sailor and that, you know, I am a normal person.
Yeah.
This is not a surprise to anybody that knows me and loves me.
Yeah.
But people are like, you know, I mean, down to things like, you know, if I've got high heels on or I'm out in a pub, I was out in a pub at the weekend and I had had a dress on that made the best of me, shall we say.
Excellent. Yes.
And someone came up to me and went, you're that vicar off the telly. Are you allowed to dress like that?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? I mean, that is...
Which just struck me as just ridiculous.
But this is a really fascinating seam, isn't it, in terms of femininity and God. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Femininity in your role as a vicar, you know.
Me and Richard Coles cannot sit in a room together because we're completely awful together. The language, the conversation, honestly, it'd make a sailor blush.
Richard Coles came on this podcast a while ago and the things he said about you were wonderful, including you must get her on the podcast. So Richard, I did it. It took me a while. But I had to cut it out because it was utter filth. And I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Why isn't there an explicit podcast with those two on? That would be amazing.
Because we never work again.
But it's really interesting, though, that, you know, that element of femininity. If a famous male vicar, Reverend Coles, is seen out dressed up in a tux looking masculine, no one's going to say, oh, you look a bit like James Bond.
Let's just break that sentence down. Richard Coles looking masculine.
Yeah, right, okay, fine. That wasn't helpful. But you know what I'm saying? If a male...
That doesn't really go, does it? But yes, I have a friend who's an army chaplain who's ripped.
Right.
Looks amazing.
Yeah.
Right? No one's saying it to him.
He's a vilf.
No one's saying it to him. Vilf. Ah!
Right?
So good.
But you're not allowed to be a vilf.
No, that's not allowed to be a vilf.
People will... And that's not fair or true.
And
right?
the perverts, the kink, the cassock chasers, as we call them in the business, are a very strange breed that slide into your DMs and the things they describe about what's underneath your cassock and what's underneath your chasuble. It's just a whole different breed. And they chase the boy priests as well and the girl priests. So what we have is we call them cassock chasers, and they will specifically come to church just because of the priest that's there. And so, you know, when Fleabag did Hot Priest, none of us, we were like, yeah, that happens.
That's a thing.
Of course, it's a thing. And you know, these days, with it being social media, you know, they slide into your DMs.
Wow. Great service today, Kate. Ooh.
I had a foot fetishist a little while ago called Foot... We nicknamed him Foot Fetishist Freddy, who wanted pictures of my feet in tights with my cassock and surplice on. So me in robes, but with stockinged feet.
Wow.
I mean, he offered a lot of money.
Well, I'm going to say, and right.
I didn't do it. I have to tell you, I didn't do it.
This is amazing.
But he offered a lot of money.
Is there an OnlyFans vicar scenario?
I'm sure there is.
There's probably a business model there.
But, you know, if the whole work thing dries up, who knows?
Never say never. Freddie, if you're listening, no, she doesn't mean that. Stop it. That is utterly extraordinary. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a known. So what happens when they're there on a Sunday sitting at the front and they're sort of unblinkingly staring at you, and you as a vicar, as a person of faith, you have to go and talk, you know.
As a woman, you know, we already have our red flags up. You know, we already know about being careful and making sure that you don't post social media until you've left the place where you are, and you know, you're sensible about getting in the car. And
but what I mean is, when you are, so say you're not the celebrity vicar, you're in a normal
jobbing.
Vicar,
yeah,
jobbing,
yeah.
And you've got these people who turn up every week.
You do all that stuff still.
Yeah, but then these people turn up and they're like, and you're like, this isn't right what they're doing.
I had one
here.
Guy that I had to phone our local PCSO on.
Right.
And I just had to say, this guy's been really weird. He's turned up at church, being really weird. And she went, what do you want me to do? And I said, there's nothing you can do. It's a public place. He's entitled to come to church. I'm just not standing next to him at coffee. And if I go missing, that's whose freezer you should look in first. You know, and, you know, it's funny. We make a joke of it because that's how we handle it, right?
Yeah, of course.
But there's a really serious element. You know, as clergy, you're going into people's homes. You don't necessarily know what's behind that door. Like social workers, like health visitors, like coppers, you know, you don't know when you knock on that door what there is behind it.
Yeah. I haven't got anything pithy to say.
No, you don't need to say anything
I'm
pithy.
I'm disarmed when I can't say pithy things. I just have to go, yeah, that's...
It's weird.
Mm.
But there's also another level of cassock chasers, which are the old ladies, the grey-haired ladies, who are just like the nice young man. Oh, he's a nice young man, isn't he? Isn't he a nice young man? Nice. And they like him to come and visit so they can drink tea and cake with him and mother him a bit.
Yeah,
and,
I love that.
You know, do that whole kind of fussing over him. And who does he like best? Flower arranging ladies, coffee ladies. Like, who does the priest like best?
But that's nice, because then sometimes, you know...
That's very sweet.
A priest can feel a bit like Robbie Williams with the bow tie undone. That's
very
nice.
Sweet. So there is an innocent level to the sort of fandom.
Yes.
But there's obviously, as with always, there's light
darker
and
shade. Side to it. There's light and shade. Gosh, this is, as I knew it would be, utterly fascinating. And Kate, time is getting away from us.
I'm so sorry.
And we are only at 2009. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. @ToasterPod is the name we're trying to jam. It's simple like a sarnie filled with cheese and ham. @ToasterPod, I swear it's not a scam, I think. 30th of November 2012. Okay, I wonder if we've got to the first thing where you're going to go, move on, I don't want to talk about that. We might have found it, guys. Forbidden Flowers, more women's sexual fantasies.
That's a great book. It's a great book. It's filthy.
It's by Nancy Friday, real name.
It's terrible. So I know exactly why I bought that book, right?
Come on.
Because I worked in a charity shop at the time, and someone had donated this book to the charity shop. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now, the charity shop was a church charity shop. So I pulled this book off the shelf and started reading it, and it's filth. It's absolute filth.
Dog collar on at the time.
Just so I'm reading this book, but it's hilarious. You know, the kind of, it's pretending it's like erotic fantasy, and it's like, but actually it's just porn, really. It's just porn. okay?
With words.
It's what it is, with
it's
words.
Wordy porn,
it's
guys.
It's just wordy porn.
Yeah.
It's just porn for people that want to think that they're cleverer than they are. That's all it is.
I like the actors in my head.
Oh, my goodness. I read Playboy for the stories. You know, it's one of those kind of hideous things. And it came into the charity shop and I started reading it and just found it hilarious.
Excellent.
Right. Obviously mildly saucy. Let's say it did its job.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... Sure. And the lady who worked in the charity shop was more of a traditional Christian than I am. And mm-hmm. she said, what are you reading?
Okay.
So I felt obliged to tell her because I thought it was hilarious that someone had donated this to the church charity shop.
Yes.
Okay. We used to get vibrators donated as well, which was hilarious.
Well, right, okay.
Sex to- and mm-hmm. explaining to old ladies what they were sometimes because they didn't know what they were.
Uh-huh.
Brilliant. So Nancy Friday comes in. I have to explain to this lady in the charity shop what it is. I read some to her. Yeah. She takes the book out of my hand, rips the pages out,
no!
and throws it away.
Oh, my word.
We're not having that in here.
Wow.
That's disgusting. Rips it all out, throws it away. So I think I'm buying that. Nancy Friday's having my money. That's what's happening there. So I buy it.
This is excellent. Please tell me when you'd finished with it, you put it back in the charity shop just to reload.
I don't know what I did with it. I think I probably passed it on to someone.
Excellent, excellent.
Yeah.
The reviews are excellent as well. A great read. No regrets. Great inspiration. This is from Don. Great inspiration for the future. Better understanding of my lady companion. Spur of the moment. Surprises and more.
Oh dear, Don's lady.
I really know my lady now.
Don's lady companion comes with a puncture repair kit. That's what I'm saying.
It's a million copy bestseller, Nancy Friday, Forbidden Flowers, endorsed by Reverend Kate
it's
Botley.
Awful.
I would love it if your quote was on the front. This is pure filth.
But my master's dissertation.
Yeah.
For vicar school was why are Christians such prudes? That was my master's dissertation, and it had a whole chapter on is it okay for vicars to use vibrators? Was a whole chapter of the dissertation.
What's the TLDR? Upshot? Yes or no?
Yes, as long as they're fair trade and the batteries are fully recyclable.
Amazing. That's so good because God hates landfill, but He loves you loving yourself. Yes. Oh, I love it. You see how things progress. The church is changing, guys. Get on board.
I was like, there's a reason they were called marathlades.
Oh,
there's a reason they were called marathlades. They're supposed to help your marriage.
Yes.
That's what they're for.
And famously, God loves them.
It's lovely.
Yes.
Have a nice time. Oh. There's literally a bit in the marriage service where I say to bride and groom, have lots of lovely sex. It's in nicer words than that. It's in church language, but that's basically what you're saying. Go and have lots of lovely sex.
Have at it. Really have at it.
Enjoy yourselves.
But the problem with that is I'd just be out of the room in that second.
Yeah, you don't but quite
you,
say it like that.
You do need to stay for the speeches. Listen, we're running out of time, so here's what I'm going to do. Okay, I'm going to skip to the end.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to skip to the end, and we're going to see where you are at the moment. We have got 19th of August. You got a three pieces cowboy banner, yeehaw banner.
Ruby's 21st birthday, we had a rodeo party with a mechanical bull. And we all dressed up and that was, straw bales. Like, I love parties. Yeah. I'm crazy about fancy dress. I absolutely adore the stuff.
I can see you've bought the inflatable horse and cowboy fancy costume dress suit.
I love it.
$24.99.
That was for Graham because I do homemade fancy dress. I make my own. I don't buy it, but that was for him.
What did you dress as for the...
I went as a cactus for that, a cardboard cactus with little cocktail sticks.
Are you a hedgehog?
Of course I did.
I am a cactus.
Of course
hedgehog.
I did.
Wow. Dog collar on the cactus?
Yeah. No, it was my daughter's birthday party. But I have been to things in fancy dress with the dog collar on. I once went as a pineapple to a beach party. I went as on World Book Day. So now, my kids don't do World Book Day, too old for it. So now I do World Book Day for strangers on the internet. So they message me and go, my child would like to go as, and I send them a costume.
No.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
That's I'm absolutely serious.
Beautiful thing. All the parents, and let's be honest, it's
I don't
mums.
Do loads of them. I do one a year.
I do one
a year where one random stranger says, will you make my child's? And I make the costume and send it to them.
Kate, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard.
Because I just love fancy dress.
That's just the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. But all the mums listening, and it is always the mums who have to make the costumes for World Book Day, are going, right, I need Kate Botley on Twitter now. Your DMs are going to be absolutely full, but it's not going to be about seeing things on feet. Wow, that is beautiful. That is absolutely beautiful. And also, I love the way this episode seems to have spanned the sort of the first 21 years of Ruby's life, because we started in 2000 when you're buying, what was it, Cocktails and Simon Sharma, looking back into the deep history of the country. And now through Faith and your last 21 years of your life and your daughter, look, here we are.
She's all grown up. And there's My baby's all grown up.
But it's you in a nutshell. It's a massive part. If Simon Sharma, right, if the emblem on his book for the last 2,000 years of British history were these stones in a beach, the emblem for the last 21 years of Kate Botley is a cowboy costume, right, is a massive party.
We had such a great night.
But that's you. That's what it is.
And what was really sweet about that, and it was all I aimed for when I became a mum, was I said to her, we'll go away for the weekend. We'll give you the house. Me and Dad and Arthur will go away for the weekend. You can have all your friends over. I'll just give you some money. You can do whatever you want. And she went, no, I want you there.
No, oh, you have achieved as a parent.
I want you there.
That's when you're like, oh, okay,
I've
done
it. And
I
was like, but all your friends are coming. And she went, no. It's not a party without you there.
Oh,
and I was like, oh my God. I mean, we went to bed at a reasonable time. We left them to it. Mm. You know, I tried to be the cool mom. I tried to, you know, but doing tequila shots with your daughter and her mates on her 21st was a lot of fun.
That's like life. You've smashed it.
It was a lot of fun.
You absolutely smashed it. I bet you stayed up later than all the kids as well. thank you so much for coming on my
You're
board.
So
Toaster.
Welcome.
I'm closing the laptop. promo bits and bobs. You do the show with Jason on Radio 2, don't you? On Sunday
morning. Sunday morning, Radio 2, 6 Lovely. Till 9. And then Steph's packed lunch on a Monday. I'm usually there. Excellent. And all sorts of other things that I pop up in places where I have no business being.
That's why we love you. That's what you're like, a friendly whack-a-mole. We love it. Kay Botley, thanks for coming on the show.
An absolute delight. Ah,
that was so good. Thank you. That's it, guys. That is the end of this series of My Mate Bought a Toaster. But there's more. There's always more. Next year, I'll be back with a whole bunch of new people. And also, if you head over to patreon.com/toasterpod, you can hear extra bits of this interview with Kate Botley, including some pretty strong fashion choices that she's made.
I've got a Christmas jumper with that on, by the way. It's a Christmas jumper with a nativity. And it says, spoiler alert, he dies.
And possibly one of the most joyfully awkward moments that I've had on the podcast when... Well, this happened. I know, disgusting. Disgusting.
I really want to see it.
Oh, shall I show you? Do you want me to show you?
I really want to see your hairy back.
Uncomfortingly.
Do you want to do it in public?
And you can find out how that moment concluded if you go to patreon.com/toasterpod. There are videos up there as well. All of last week's interview with the fabulous Fatia El Ghori, that is up there as well. And there is a video interview with a fabulous psychologist talking about why we shop and why we get what we get on Amazon. And there's all sorts of other stuff as well. Anyway, listen, that's it from me for this series. Thank you so much for all your lovely messages and your support of the podcast. It means the world. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you get a chance, please give us a rating and a review, because obviously that's super important. And that's it. Have a great Christmas. And see you in 2020. What is it? Is it 2023 next? Come on, that's ridiculous. It's my mate. Oh, toaster. Oh, it's my mate.